why don't you just start and introduce yourself?
I'm Elise Galvin, and I'm running for Congress.
Okay. So, Don Young's been at this a long time. You know, the Democrats have been trying to unseat him for a very long time. What makes your run different?
Well, first of all, just a little clarification. I'm an independent. I am running on the Democratic ballot, and so there will be a primary vote on August 21st. But I've been an independent for 12 years. And I really believe that it's long past time to put partisan battles aside and get things done. And so I think that it's important that people recognize that distinction, because that's exactly how we're going to win, is that I think people are feeling the way I felt 12 years ago when I became an independent. And they'd like to see things done. And I think that we're all getting to a point where we're seeing kind of the fruit or no fruit from not getting things done. Alaskans are, you know, we're 49th out of 50th in terms of job growth. We are experiencing the real effects of having an economy based on the price of oil. And I think that we're also tired of, I'll just call it lack of civility in politics. And so I think people are ready for a change. And I'm excited to be there for that.
So let's back up to 12 years ago then. Mm-hmm. What were you and what made you shift?
Yeah. No, I was a Democrat all the way since I was 18. And I think – back at that time, the issue of the day was apartheid. Hmm. And actually, I was part of a university group that got Desmond Tutu to come and speak. And so I've been somewhat aware of politics all along. But of course, when I started raising my family, politics were put aside, and I devoted my time and energy into education, public education. And then when it came time to watching politics on the side and how it was dealing with public education, which, by the way, is nonpartisan, every child goes into kindergarten and nobody pays attention, of course, nor should they, to their politics. But their kids are not getting the supports that they needed. And so that's where I put my efforts. And for me, I really work on what issues I care about. And when I dealt with education and peeling apart what's needed in order to make our students have the opportunities they deserve, it really was important for me to understand that it's not just about what happens in K-12. It's whether or not the families are getting the supports they need. And then, of course, when you look at whether or not they're getting the lack of stress at home, or I should say that the supports at home by a home where the parents have access to a living wage and can come home after one job, not two or three, and spend time with their kiddos, that really makes a difference. And it makes a difference if they have access to health care and affordable housing and, you know, all the basics that we know is what keeps a family strong. So I became immersed in all of the issues, because you can't just look at one when you look at education. Education spending is something that's important to look at as well, because it's expensive. And when you peel that apart, it turns out that healthcare has been the largest cost driver of education. And so that grew me, that of course helped me to become more familiar with those issues. And I became a very strong proponent for fixing healthcare as well, years ago.
So, but you know, you very specifically referenced 12 years ago. So, what happened 12 years ago that shifted you, or what were you getting more involved in?
You know, I think it just became year after year of watching special sessions happen, and also government shutdown. And it was actually on the 4th of July. I frankly don't remember it specifically in terms of what issue was happening that year, but there's been a degradation of work getting done, particularly in education. I would say, for the last 15 years. Mm. So it was probably education and then the fact that something didn't happen at that time, but I don't remember this specific bill. Mm. Yeah.
And 12 years ago, was Great Alaska Schools already a thing? Were you already involved in
Great
that?
Great Alaska Schools was a thing, although it wasn't – it was kind of on ice because I think they had had a STEM push. Mm-hmm. And then after the STEM push, that sort of quieted down. Moms, dads, everybody got busy for a while doing other things. And then it popped again about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So 5 years ago is when I became very active in coordinating activities and getting people excited to do things in their own ways in their own communities throughout the state.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So back to my original first question then. A lot of different people have been trying to unseat Don Young for a long time. What makes your run different?
Well, we're in a different time, and I'm certainly a different candidate. In terms of the time, of course, you know that Alaskans are frustrated about many things to do with politics, and they're more aware because it's hitting their pocketbook. It's hitting their sense of wellness. It's even hitting their sense of dignity. Mm. We have elders who are worried about their Social Security checks. We have people who are concerned about their health care. People are even taking their pills every other day rather than every day. That, you know, it's a real hand-to-mouth sort of situation right now. So I think people are becoming – looking around and saying, all right, well, who's been in office for a heck of a long time and not fixed anything? And I think people are feeling that and more aware than ever. We're also in a new situation because I'm a different sort of candidate. I'm not a politician, nor have I ever been. But I think people like that. I think it's exactly why I'm running, because as I was watching what was going on back east in D.C. and frankly in Juneau, it became clear that there weren't enough people like me, like everyday people helping to make those decisions. And I think it helps when you've recently raised a family. You've been there. You've held jobs recently on the street. You know what it's like to be trying to reach out to your leadership and feeling like those letters are not getting read, or the phone calls aren't really being measured, or people aren't taking your word for as though you're a real constituent. And so I think that does make this different. Mm-hmm. It is time to be bringing it back home to a place where I'll just say it's called of the people. And that's a lot of what I'm running on, is being of the people, by the people, and I'm one of those. And I do know how the processes work. I have been, as you know, the last 5 years watching it very carefully and helping the public better understand where the bills are, how they're being processed. So I have a sense of that from the outside, not from the inside, but enough that I think I can really make things happen. There will be a learning curve, but I know how to pull together people, smart people who know how to get things done. And I also know how to make friends. I know how to use social media. I know how to – I'm proud that I text friends and I use the computer. I have a laptop. So I think it's important that people know that too, or that I'm ready for this. This is a different time. There are only going to be two names on the general election ballot too, by the way. That we haven't seen for many cycles. I would say at least 8 years. Hmm. And that's a big difference because Don Young's popularity has been waning. He's down to 50.32 last time. Hmm. 50.32, and there are only two names on the ballot. It's time to get somebody in there who we know can beat him. So I'm really excited about this.
Yeah. And so your campaign's raised more than $500,000, according to the last FEC report, through June 30th. Mm-hmm. Looked like it was mostly from individual contributions. Have you ever done any kind of fundraising at that scale before? And what lessons have you learned along the way so far?
Fundraising at that scale. Well, no, I've had a lot of bake sales, but I don't think that's – I've also been in business, but in business I've done sales, so it's not really the same as bringing in people to believe in your vision and be a part of it. But I am very used to organizing people, and people have decided to chip in on this vision for the future, And we have raised over $600,000 now. And you're right. It is from individuals. There are two checks that are not one is from the NEA, the National Educators Association. They actually endorsed me for the first time ever. They have endorsed against Don Young in a primary. And that's significant, and we're very, very grateful. It's more than 13,000 members, and it's exciting for us to have an opportunity to reach out to them and help them be a part of the process more. As you know, education is certainly the core of democracy in my mind, and I feel strongly that it'll allow us to have more conversations about that at the table on, as a candidate and throughout, because we need to have more people engaged in these conversations. Other bits about the money, well, I will sign me up first for the End Citizens United. In fact, I hope to get their support. I do believe we need to have campaign finance reform where we have more transparency around the dollars. It's absolutely critical. This is a lot of the reason why Don Young has been in for 45 years. I think there are some organizations who are afraid that they may lose out on support from him if they don't support him. And that's really a shame because I'm ready to be that next champion. And so I think that in time people are coming around, but it's interesting to see this process. And I have – I'll tell you that of that 600,000, 85% or more are from $100 or less. So we're talking about thousands of Alaskans who are really ready for change, ready for a new voice, and I'm very grateful to be that conduit.
And so you build yourself as an independent, and mm-hmm. you're running the Democratic primary. You've got support of Political Action Committee and the fundraising platform, fundraising support platform, Act Blue, which backs Democrats and progressives.
Yeah, so actually we use two different platforms. Okay. That's really more like a PayPal, just to be clear about that. I don't have any money from them. It's just a process. So if you push on the button, they are able to process the money for me. And frankly, I use them and another group called NGP. They charge less, so I'd rather – I mean oftentimes I'll use them as well. It's really I guess they do have some sort of a PAC, but I don't have any of their money.
I guess it's
– I'm not taking –
They use the PAC as the pass-through is
yeah,
my understanding.
Yeah, I don't know. It's – like I said, it's really not their support. It's a matter of getting them to process the funds. And all – as far as I know, all of the candidates use that. That's what I was told when I started running. It's not an unusual thing. And some people –
Well, I guess the distinction I'm drawing is Republicans aren't allowed to use it.
Oh, yes. Oh, they are. Oh, well, I don't
On
know that.
Act Blue specifically, at
okay,
least. I don't know about
don't
the other one.
I don't even know. I'm not sure about that. I can tell you that Republicans have certainly given to me. So they must be allowed to
donate.
Must
be doing it a different way. Yeah.
I don't know.
Through that site.
Yeah. That's a good question. But I'm not taking any dollars from corporate PAC money, just to be very clear about that. I think it's very important that folks know, unlike – you know, Don Young, for example, 48% of his dollars came from PAC money this last quarter. And interestingly, someone just told me who had peeled through all of the numbers, 68% of his individual dollars from individuals that are filed on FEC, 68% come from outside of Alaska. And I think that, you know, it's important for us to think about money. That's why I'm signing up for End Citizens United. I think that it's important that we look at more transparency in the dollars, more accountability, so that people know, like, who you're really representing. That's really important to me. I've looked at – I can't even tell which corporate PACs have given – to him because you can't – it's sort of a vague name and then it's hard to know who belongs to that name. I've seen sugar farmers a lot and just different groups that I don't think are really significant to Alaska. And to me, I think that we're looking for a fighter for Alaskans and that should be Alaskans first. And that really means that – that's where the money should be, you know, coming from. I think that's really important, at least, that we are able to see where it's coming from. And so I'm all about more transparency.
And so policy-wise, though, what distinguishes you from, you know, the typical Democrat?
what distinguishes me from the typical Democrat? Yeah. You know, I'd have to think about that for – I'd have to study that because the platform just came out for – are you referring to the Alaska Democrats? Because they're different
platforms. I didn't have a specific platform in mind, but, yeah. You know, education and women's rights. And,
yeah, no, I think that I would align very much with the values of the party. I'd have to know exactly where they are on particular bills. To me, it has to fit for Alaska. So, for example, women's rights, yes, I'm very, very supportive of Alaskan women and all women having the opportunity to make decisions about their own bodies with their doctors. That's just all on that's very important to me. It's also important that we have education that allows us to learn about our bodies in age-appropriate ways. Mm-hmm. I think it keeps us safe, and it's very important that we develop policy that best enables that opportunity. In terms of jobs, I strongly believe that every Alaskan and American should be able to work 40 hours and make enough money that they can come home and spend time with their family. Very simple. We need to have livable wages with wage growth. With health care, we need to have access to it, affordable health care for all and accessible. And how we get there, I'm open to any avenue to that, but we've got to get that taken care of, especially for Alaska where we have the highest costs per capita in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then other issues around public safety. I think that we're missing the mark up here for Alaskans. We're short. The last I read, it was 48 state troopers short, empty spots. There are whole communities who are not with any law enforcement, and that's absolutely unconscionable. I think there are things we should be doing on the federal level with regard to grant opportunities or whatever it takes to ensure that every Alaskan community is covered. We're missing VPSOs and state troopers, and it's showing. People are feeling very unsafe. And similarly, I think on the national level, we're feeling unsafe with a governor, with a president who is really he's behaving in ways that make us all very nervous when we see foreign policy deliberated on Twitter, when we see tariffs and other things happening in a day without any process or seemingly no strategy, no plan, and already we're seeing the ramifications of that within our fisheries. People are worrying about the larger infrastructure plants that we have on the table in the future, for example, the gas line. Surely these things have not been well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
So in Congress, we need to make sure that our president's held accountable.
Let me try. What's your time frame like here? It's 20 minutes, half hour.
We'd really like to leave about 1:25.
Okay.
Would
okay.
That work for you?
Yeah. Okay. Let me see if maybe I could just run through a handful of policy things and we can move through some of these quick. There was the roadless rule change happening in the Tongass recently. You have
I support the roadless rule. I do. I was just in Ketchikan where we were talking about that quite a bit, and I think that it is a national, the Tongass National Forest. I'm sure that you're talking about, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it strikes an appropriate balance between the conservation of old growth forest areas and allowing the timber industry, to economically log areas previously disturbed. I think it's important that we have that balance between economic gain and the least amount of environmental impact.
Okay.
I also know that sometimes, some roads where it's demonstrable and the locals are deciding that it's needed, then that decision would be made locally.
You talked about affordable health care. Do you have a specific, established platform on it? Like your opponent one of your opponents in the Democratic primary said he wants Medicaid for all. There's, the old status quo Obamacare and then whatever it's turning into now.
Right. Well, I don't know if you read just yesterday, there was the new Trump care idea of temporary insurance or short-term insurance.
I missed it.
Well, it's going to really, really hurt us because it's now allowing some companies to not take people with pre-existing conditions. So here it is. I believe that everyone should have quality, comprehensive health care without having to worry that it's going to bankrupt their family. Our health care system is broken. It doesn't cover enough. It's hard for Alaskans to find doctors, and it's too expensive. So it's actually preventing our elders from leading lives of dignity and respect.
But as far as some of the shorthand policies out there, you have a specific single payer, any?
Yeah, I think those are all good ideas, and I'm open to them. And I really like the Alaska Native Health Tribal Health Consortium NUCA model. Mm-hmm. It's a homegrown Alaskan model of excellent care at low cost, in fact, about half the cost as the rest of us. And it insures over 100,000 people. And it's also actually it's covering VA, 25% of the VA patients as well. So whether it's, you know, one label or another, I don't really care what it's called. I'm committed to ensuring, though, that every Alaskan has quality, comprehensive health care without worrying, as my family did, especially when we had our second kiddo, that it's going to cause financial ruin. Mm-hmm. That's what I stand for, and that's what I'll fight for as a congresswoman.
Military in Alaska, increased Coast Guard presence and F-35s up in Miles.
I think that those are the way our president has been behaving. I wouldn't turn any military support away here. I think it's important that we look at what it is. I think it's important to, from leadership perspective to ensure that they, if it's a contract, that it's Alaskan jobs and that we make sure that there's housing nearby and all of that makes sense. But right now we have the longest coastline, as you know, in the entire nation. We've got a lot to protect. A lot of ground to protect, a lot of people to protect, and right now we're not very mobile. We don't have large vessel ports in many of the areas. We don't have cutters, really, that can go up to anywhere near the number that other nations have. Russia has 20-something. I just saw two in Ketchikan, and I know there are a couple in Kodiak, but they're tiny compared to what we should have. So there's a lot of support that needs to happen, but moreover, just kind of thinking bigger picture – the dollars that are going into military are absolutely unbelievable. And I think we need to pay attention to whether or not they're creating a stronger America. So I would be looking at the wages, for example, that our military are making. I know that many of our children in Alaska who are military children, 2 out of 5 are experiencing food insecurity. 2 out of 5 in the Anchorage area, and I think it's statewide actually, are able to get free or reduced lunches because their families are making so little. And that doesn't make us a very strong Alaska or America. I also know that the spouses of military are not able to get employment anywhere near those who are outside of the military. And the reason is that they move frequently. And so I think that we need to create some incentives for that because, interestingly, they are much more educated than others. So there's some disparity there. And, again, I think that that should be worked on.
Okay. A couple of other issues. Let's see. Resource extraction, whether it's like offshore or in some of the refuges. Do you have a position on those?
Yeah. So with regard to resources, we are a natural resource state. Our greatest resource is our people. I think that we need to, first of all, make sure that we're well-educated. So I'm not going to – I want to make sure to point that out. But in terms of natural resources and extraction, yes, we have mining. We have oil and gas and lots of other opportunities for us here in Alaska. Our best resources that we haven't really explored are the renewable resources. We've got hydro, wind, tidal. Tidal hasn't really gotten enough front-end investment. Solar, and we're doing pretty well. As you know, we've been an oil and gas state for a long, long time, particularly oil. And that's now two-thirds of our economy, one-third of our jobs. But we've got to be looking ahead to the future, and we have not been. I know that they did pass that bill that they called the tax bill, the corporate giveaway, but it ended up adding in the refuge, the 1002 oil development opportunity. And that is the way that passed, I think, is absolutely not the way I would do business. I think that there was no process. I think anything that involves oil and gas development should include local input. I'd like to bring back coastal management. At the same time, I do know that those jobs for now, the oil and gas, they are a third of our economy, and they are well-paying jobs. I'd like them to be Alaskan jobs. There was no guarantee that that would happen, and we ended up for that particular one, the deal that was made, I'm going to call it a deal, air quotes, gave away 40%. It was supposed to be 90% to Alaska, and it became 50. Hmm. And again, there was no agreement on Alaska hire. I think that the next Congresswoman needs to be focusing in a robust way on how we're going to move our economy from being so dependent on the price of oil. And I can't wait to be a part of that. I visited the Cold Climate Housing Research Center twice now. There's some awesome things that we can be doing that's moving our economy into things like building in different ways, building homes in different ways, homes that actually are not only utilizing the earth in ways that we should be using it as good global citizens, but it's exciting because the costs of being able to live in these homes is half or even less than what it's been in the past because we didn't have any local energy in these particular rural areas. So those model homes there is exactly what it's all about for our future. And there are dollars for it. There's ways for us to get to that. So I look to that to be our new opportunity for using energy differently, for expanding our way of bringing jobs to Alaskans. We have 70% of our kiddos not going on to four-year colleges, but they could get into those jobs of building right away. Hmm. And that's exciting for us because it also keeps our families able to live in rural Alaska and afford to live there. So I'm excited about how we're going to move from that sort of energy to the newer sort of energy. We have 4% of the nation's population here in the United States. Of the world's population here in the United States, and we're using 19% of the energy. Hmm. So we need to change up the way we're doing things, and I'd like Alaska to be on the front end of something. Hmm. Right now we have – Don Young is a – he doesn't believe in science or climate change, nor does Donald Trump. So we're in a real fix here, and it's time for change.
On climate change, just to make it crystal clear, what's your – understanding of climate change, or what's your
climate change is real. Climate change is human caused. Climate change is affecting ocean acidification. It's changing the temperature of water. It's changing the amount of emissions that we're getting in the tundra now because it's warming. A lot of things are changing up here in Alaska. We're ground zero for climate change, and it as horrible as it is, it also gives us opportunity. We are up at UAF doing fantastic work on studying climate change and also using elders and people who are outside of the university but who have been experiencing it for generations. They are developing a very important piece of knowledge for us. We need to ensure to front-end fund it and make sure that we're wholly supporting the work out of there so that we can decide not only what to do about it now in terms of changing our ways, but also how can we set ourselves up for the future so the next generation wants to be here and can live here. As you know, everybody, I'm sure you cover news, so you're aware that everybody and their brother is talking about fish and the lack of fish. And how could we not understand that the whole ecology of the ocean is changing because of the warm water and because of the erosion There's a lot of stress now up on the rivers, and so when those tiny fish are coming out, they're not getting as strong as they could be getting. They're not getting the food that they're used to getting. It's just what I'm hearing everywhere is that people are so frustrated and upset, and so we need to really have a leader who gets climate change, agrees that it's real, and is willing to put a lot of energy into getting the rest of the nation's leadership to front-end fund this work so that we're not faced with not being able to feed our families and not being able to have this world-class fish resource for the, you know, really for the whole world.
Okay. I think I've got two more policy issues left I want to explore. Land into trust. Taking land into trust, the Bureau of Indian Affairs under the Obama administration had been shifting towards interpreting, you know, kind of an ambiguous law or ambiguous set of regulations having to do with Alaska Native tribes being able to put land into trust with the BIA and essentially make it tax-free and sovereign.
So ANILCA and things beyond that.
It's beyond that. Yeah, it's kind of this interaction of
Is it mental health trust dollars or land?
No, it's a different thing.
It has to do with
whether provisions set up for lower 48 Native American tribes to take land that they own and, you know, essentially kind of turn it into sort of like a reservation land, but it's not reservation land. They call it the Bureau of Indian Affairs taking their land into trust, and that qualifies it as Indian country and lets the tribes manage that land differently than if it were under subject to, you know, whatever other local and state and federal rules would apply.
Yeah,
so there was a shift.
I would need to study that more, to be honest. I don't know a lot about it, but I do support sovereignty. I support that the Indian lands, where we have seen more opportunities for them to decide on what they're going to do with not only their land but how they're going to organize themselves, it's really important. So, and I've been meeting with within the different communities throughout Alaska, I start with the tribal councils or that sort of organization, and then I go to the native corporations and I hear from them. I ask them, so what is it that are your issues and how would I be able to better represent you? I do believe that it's important that we go and travel to these areas, experience them, hear firsthand what they're looking for. If there's a way for us to support it in Congress, or if it's another way, help them to navigate that so that the people are feeling served and heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
And LGBTQ rights and, you know, job protections, military, what?
Yeah. I have a whole lot out on that.
Okay.
I think it's probably everywhere. So, but where would I see if I can get to so I don't misspeak about what I've already said? I hate to say something differently, but in terms of just basic racial justice equality, because it's more than LGBTQ, but it's all of them. I think it's important that we recognize that it's not just about saying, yes, I love all people. It's also about ensuring that they have rights, that they feel that they are respected and they can go into a workplace and apply and have the same opportunity to get the job or housing, for example. And that sometimes requires laws to be written about it. I would like to, for example, with regard to women, I think that we need to fully help others understand that right now we're earning still 77% for women. They're earning 77% of their male counterparts' earnings. So there's some work yet to be done for that, for equality. For racial equality, it's the same sort of problems where we're seeing police enforcement much more antiquated. I think that we need to bring people up to speed to have culturally responsive training. And that's not just for race. It's also for gender equality. I have been, you know, the kind of person I am, I've been going to Pride Parade since my kids were babies and walking because I want them to see that all people need to feel supported, cherished, celebrated, and have a pathway to know that they're warmly accepted.
Okay. And, you know, most of these issues, it seems like you line up, you know, as a moderate or a progressive. Anything out there that any – do you have any policy positions that would might surprise people or might line up closer with the right? Second Amendment?
Oh, well, I don't know that that's the – I think that's Alaskan. See, this is the problem. We talk about left and right, and I don't really think that way. Mm-hmm. I think about how Alaskans are, and I think I'm pretty typically Alaskan. When you talk about gun rights, I do support the Second Amendment. We get it that our culture is guns. I have my freezer is full of moose. I have two different kinds of moose right now. I didn't bring it home, but my friends did. I haven't hunted in years, but I do fish. I do other things. But I was trained how to shoot and shown how to be safe around a gun. I think everybody should be, but some people might call that right wing or conservative or what have you, but I don't. It's Alaskan. And does that mean that I don't recognize what's happening in every place from Columbine to Florida to Las Vegas? I've been following all of these in Bethel. Yeah, I totally think that we need to be very smart about our policy. I think all Alaskans would support background checks. I think we're doing it in 21 states. It's time to get us all on board and make sure that the laws we have there already on the books are enforced. I also think that there might be a place for us to have more education. I do. I think that if we're going to keep guns around us all the time, let's be educated about it. I also think that the CDC should get the funding that it takes to know what levers to push so that we're not living in fear. Right now, I know kids personally, my own. I have two of them who are very nervous. Each time these shootings happen, it brings up all kinds of trauma. People can't sleep at night. Parents are very uncomfortable sending their kids in. No teacher should have to feel like they should be armed. That's ridiculous. They want to teach. So there are some things that we should be doing in terms of what levers. Let's find out from the CDC and make smart decisions about that. I'm a mom of four. Jeez, I would absolutely be interested in knowing which are the best levers to pull. In Alaska, we're actually dying at twice the amount of the rest of the lower 48 by firearms. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're aware of that. A lot of people aren't. But we're dying at 23 per 100,000 people by firearm mm-hmm. per year. Lower 48 are dying by 11 per 100,000. So we're 23, they're 11 per 100,000 per year. So we've got some work to do. For us to just pretend like that's nothing would be silly. In fact, I think it's unconscionable if you're a leader to ignore that. But if you splice apart Alaska, for example, and I don't know about the rest of the U.S., and that's why I'd want to see some expert advice on this. But in Alaska, I know that more than half are by suicide. So what does that mean? Well, that means our dollars probably should and policy should be around mental health. And are we really getting enough caregiving here? I know that I've been traveling all over the state, and many of the communities are doing their mental health on the phone because they don't have counselors there. Counselors in high schools have been cut half and then half again and then half again because of lack of funding. So there you go. And now I'm running. I'm done. It's time for us to stand up and get something done. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's exactly why I'm running.
Just about out of time. It's 1:25. I wanted to ask you a few questions about your personal life if you've got the time to spare.
Yeah, quick.
You know, what's your Alaska story? Did you grow up here? How'd you end up in Alaska?
Yeah, so a lifelong Alaskan. My family came up when they were serving in World War II. I had two uncles. Mm-hmm. And they stayed on as butchers, as builders, and then others became auto mechanics and outlaws and misfits, a little bit of everything. I'm Alaskan. And I did go south for schooling and came back up with my husband, dragged him up here from San Diego. And we raised our four kids here. My youngest is 18, and then my oldest is 27. And so I'm really at that stage where I desperately want them to be here and stay here and have their kids here.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make the Alaska where they want to be here and, of course, where all Alaskan kids want to have their kids here too.
You know, mostly in Anchorage or was it
Yeah. So I've lived in – mostly in Anchorage. I also lived a few years in Juneau and I have worked in lots of different places. When I was working for the Department of Education, for example, I did work in Mountain Village, in Stebbins, St. Michael's, Kotzebue, and Fairbanks, a little bit of work in other places. I'm learning a lot more about the state now, though, in this campaign. It's been fantastic.
And what's your professional background in?
Yeah, so in terms of putting myself through college, I've worked in every sort of job you'd imagine, from fish processing or the slime line to working in construction sites, lots of hauling trash and pulling dogs, things like that on forms. And then I've also lots of waitressing, and I have owned a home daycare business. I owned a Unibine book distributorship, and it was a thermal binding system that made books in less than a minute.
Is that the sales thing you alluded to earlier?
Yeah, it was a sales distributorship. I started out in sales, and then I ended up – I did quite well, and they allowed me to have all of the western states for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also up here have worked – I managed – I was a manager at a larger hotel in Anchorage, and in the last 4.5 years, I've been doing work on my own as a volunteer for Great Alaska Schools.
And you guys had registered as lobbyists at one point? No.
Oh, no. We never had to register.
Okay.
No money went through us. We were truly grassroots, parents, grandparents, educators, kids, lots of students. And you have to register as a lobbyist if you get so much amount of face time with legislators. That's sort of the rule. And I, unfortunately, probably because we're not from money, we were grassroots, we didn't get that much time, face time. We spent more time on the Capitol steps and in the hallways than we were able to in the offices. But we did get a lot of good conversations, and it was a good experience for all of us. And I think it kept education on the front burner. I got to where a lot of people were saying, you know, we're going to hold the line this year. You don't have to come to Juneau. And I know for them, they felt like that was going to be their ticket to not have us in their hair, so to speak. But as you know, and I think most Alaskans know, when you're holding the line, it doesn't mean you're keeping up with the costs of education. So as healthcare costs and other things went up, we're still each and every year experiencing cuts of teachers. So that's still a problem.
Okay. And I just watched your Music Saved My Life TV spot before he came in. Do you still do music, or was that ever a professional thing, or is that just a side thing?
Oh, so when I first went into college, I thought I might – I did start out as a music major, and voice was my major area of concentration. And about 3 years in, I decided that was not where I wanted to head. It felt a bit self-serving and just wasn't what I wanted to do. And I had taken so many classes in other areas like history and such that I decided to change majors to be – I was a political science major and had an area of concentration in history and quantitative decision-making, I think, was the two.
You don't do music anymore or sing as a hobby or anything anymore?
Singing will be with me every time I take a shower. yeah, I do, of course, sing. I come down for Alaska Folk Festival every year. No, not every year, but as often as I can. And my children all had a lot of music. They each took a couple of years of violin. In fact, Shaw here in Juneau was a major part of our kids' lives. But we did music is it, – it, for me, I come from a very dysfunctional family. I appreciate dysfunction when I talk about it. When I talk about healthy families and strengthening families, it's because I know the other side. And I know how important it is that young children don't have to deal with that stress when they're walking into school and they're trying to create a future for themselves. So you will hear me occasionally talk about it. I don't think it's something that we need to dwell on, but I do think it's important that people understand that I get it. I had a lot of addictions, and there were also domestic abuse in my house early on. And then my family was so dysfunctional that it split apart, and there was nobody there to take care of us, frankly. And so I did end up going to a boarding school. And at that school, it was the community of music.
How old were you?
That made me whole.
How old were you?
It's hard for a lot of people to hear this, but actually I was 10 when I went to my first boarding school. And it was it turned out for me to be a lifesaver. I had a place where there were people, other adults around me that were very supportive, and like I say, it was music ultimately that brought me in and helped me feel centered. I'm a spiritual person, and so I certainly found that strength through music. For others, it's sports, or maybe it's books, or you know, different things. And I'm grateful, and I will always be. Music will always have a special place in my heart, and the people around music. Frankly, I think it's, of course, that too. The relationships that come with making music together.
So, I don't want to pry if you don't want to talk about it, but I don't understand the connection between the families. Some issues at home. Let's send Elise to boarding school?
Yeah, well, there was no adult to take care of us. So it was, in Anchorage back in the day, this would be 1975-ish, 74. There were an orphanage, or I could have gone to my family, my elders picked up the bill for
– I see.
That's what happened is that they took us – an uncle – snatched us in with – we had no warning and took us off to Arizona. And we went to a boarding school there for a few months. Then we tried again up here. It's a long, sordid story. But my mom tried to come and be whole again, and she was just very weak and addictive and mentally ill, and she couldn't – so it was back and forth for, quite a few years of in and out of boarding schools and then trying again to live with her. And each time they would end with her attempted suicide, frankly. And so I'd find her after the first time it was OD on pills. And then the next one I found her with her wrist slit. And the next time – so those different occasions then – my grandparents, who were retired and older, but they had worked here in Alaska all their lives and had retired to Arizona. So what they did was basically they were willing to take us in, and as long as we went to boarding school.
I see.
Okay. So that's how that happened. And then I had relatives up here who were great, and they took us up to – in fact, my great uncle is still alive. He's my one elder who took us in and would let me – took me in – work on his – in his construction work every summer. So I was able to get, enough of a life that I could live up here with them and in the summer times and still keep Alaska my home.
And your parents are out of the picture now?
They both passed away now.
Okay. Okay. And did I hear you say earlier you personally had some addiction issues too or not?
No.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Okay. No. Well, I think I'm about to get the hook.
One correction on NUCA is South Central Foundation, not ANTHC.
Oh, yeah. So it's really gone through South Central.
Yeah. If you
want me to say that on here?
That's right.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.